Barhill Records. Der Talk.
Hallo, hier ist Barhill Records, der Talk. Ich stelle in jeder Folge Musikerinnen bzw. Bands vor, die entweder bei meinem Label Barhill Records unter Vertrag stehen oder mit denen ich in meiner Funktion als Musikjournalist gesprochen habe. Zu Gast in Folge 24 von Barhill Records, der Talk, ist James Graham, der Sänger der schottischen Postpunker The Twilight Set. Die haben just ihr sechstes Album It's the Long Goodbye über Rock Action Records veröffentlicht. Über dieses und dessen Entstehungsgeschichte, über die besondere Verbindung zu seinem Bandkollegen, dem Gitarristen Andy McFarlane und auch zu The Cure sprach ich mit Graham. Es war ein sehr emotionales und intensives Gespräch, aber hört selbst.
Hello James, how are you?
I'm okay, yeah, I'm nervous, a little bit stressed, just about the record coming out, to be honest. It's been a long time, it's a big deal for me, you know, and it's a big deal for Andy too, so I really want to be so excited about it, because I love the record, and I couldn't have done any more, or any, like, I did everything I could, and I'm so proud of Andy, but yeah, it's a scary thing to put everything into something and then the world put it out to the universe and the world will judge you. But if this record finds one person that understands it, then it was worth doing. It was worth doing just for my own for my own mental health, to be honest, to get these feelings out of my head and out of my body, you know. So it's a weird feeling. I can't quite describe it. I'm feeling okay just now though. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
I understand. I kind of understand how you feel. But the record is brilliant. But let's talk about the record a bit later. Are you an early bird? It's 10 o'clock in the morning in Scotland, and we're doing this interview now.
I have two children. I've okay. got a four-year-old, and my oldest will be eight this year. So I've done the school. I've taken them to school, a nursery. And yeah, since having kids, I'm up at 7 o'clock in the morning every day. It's just my body's just like used to that now, because yeah, I've really flung myself into fatherhood. It's something more, even more than a singer, that I wanted in my life. So I'm trying to do the best job I possibly can. So I am an early bird now. I wasn't before. I hated mornings. Hated mornings. But now I'm up. I need to go for a walk or a cycle just to level my head in the morning and prepare myself for the day. Just all tools that I've learned after having been very ill. So, yeah, I am now. I'm a morning person now.
Where do you live in Scotland, if I may ask? And are you more country kind of a guy or city kind of a guy?
Well, it's been like a full 360, to be honest. I grew up in a small farming village called Banton, so small that I was the only boy in my class at school, me and five girls. And then I went to high school in a place called Kilsyth, a bigger town where I met Andy. And I always wanted to escape to the city and live my life and, like, yeah, all the things youth was telling me to do. But as I've got older and I've had a family now, I find myself back in a farming village, but this time in the northeast of Scotland, in between Dundee and Aberdeen. It's a little village that's got the second oldest whiskey distillery at it that my wife works at. She's the actual tour guide of the whiskey distillery. Can't get much more Scottish than that.
Nope. You could do the stones for the curling. It's yeah. Even more Scottish, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I actually watched the final of that on the Winter Olympics. So, yeah, it's such funny how everybody was in Scotland was so focused on that evening. And we lost. Typical Scottish. But we lost. But, yeah, so I find myself, yeah, country guy now, and I'm very happy up here. I've got the hills just beside me. I've got the beach 20 minutes away from me. My wife's family are here, and I support the local football. I support Aberdeen Football Club, so I'm not that far away from there now. So I get to go to the games with my boys. So my life is different, but I'm very happy where I am. It's the calm that I needed. Well, calm with two boys, you know, under 10. It's not so calm.
Did you ever do the famous whiskey trail?
No, I'm not a big whiskey person, to be honest. I can just feel the nation of Scotland going boo to me. But I like it. I don't drink it a lot, but I haven't. But I've heard so much about it now that my wife's works in whiskey. We're hearing a lot more about it, and I've got a lot of friends that love whiskey and stuff. But I don't drink as much as I used to. Having been ill and then just realizing that my body is decaying. I don't. It doesn't need any extra help.
Your last album was It Won't Be Like This All the Time, released at the beginning of 2019. I've seen you live that year at the Mayfield Derby Festival in the glowing afternoon sun, a show I won't forget. I was front row. But then COVID turned the world upside down. How did you experience that time?
I had my oldest son, Arthur. We used a baby when COVID kind of struck. We lived in a flat in Glasgow at that point, with a we didn't like a second floor flat, so there was no garden, no ways to go outside apart from just the hour that we got every day to go outside. Having a young child like that just made us, we had a responsibility to get up every morning, do things. If I had hadn't been married with a child, I think lockdown and COVID would have been a lot different for me. I wouldn't have coped as well as
A
I
lot
possibly
harder,
did.
yeah.
I had a focus, you know, to get up every day and do this, and that's been a thing even beyond COVID with my mental illness. The thing that was making me get up every day was to be a father, you know, and like get there. So COVID kind of had that, but I also had my mother and my father who lived about 40 minutes away from me. And my mother was very ill at that point, and my dad was her only carer. So it was extremely, extremely hard to try and navigate that situation where my dad's in his late 70s now. My mum's passed away now, but like, just so worried about them, you know, like just so worried. Like she was quite frail at that point as well, and my dad, she needed my dad, so it was like if he got COVID, then it was just like, but luckily we battled through that. And do you know, there was some she became they became we were allowed to see each other, like we were linked, a bubble, I think they called it a bubble. There was so much stupid fucking shit terms that were in my head at that time, you know, like, but we were in a bubble, and I was able to just we were able to spend time with each other. And do you know, there was something about the rest of the world not being around us and just being able to focus on each other, which now looking back on it, I appreciate. But it was just the never knowing when this was going to end really was the main thing. If you knew when it was going to end, you could at least, I don't know.
You had a goal.
I wouldn't, I don't want to use the word enjoy it, but you know, like use say I've got this allocated amount of time where the world is distant and I don't need to care about like all that, focus on getting through this and trying to make the most of a terrible situation, you know. But it was just the turning the TV on in the morning and just ho the hope that something was going to change really messed with a lot of people's heads, I feel. It definitely messed with mine.
And how did you cope as a band with the whole situation?
Luckily, we had came to the end of an al the album touring. It won't be like this all the time. So there was going to be a bit of downtime for the band. But we just rallied together and just found like things that we could put out there that would give a little bit of hope. We did some concerts, just Andy and I. We recorded live album kind of things, just things to keep going, you know, just keep moving forward was the goal. And it was very tough to, I mean, the fact that we're 20 years and we're still a band and even went through things like that other bands haven't been through as well, you know, quite a testament to our belief in each other, I felt, you know. Andy's my friend, so we were constantly in contact, and he was looking out for me and I was looking out for him, and he had his own struggles as well, but brought us together, you know. We were writing this album whilst it was happening as well, you know. So maybe that time helped process the feelings to make sure that we could write the best songs we could.
Since the before mentioned album, apart from some re-releases of older albums, you've released multiple live albums and live EPs. As a fan of the band, I really appreciated all of them, but the amount was unusual. Don't you think so? No complaints at all. But
no. It was a thing we thought we were on the Cure tour at that point, and we were playing every night. And it was just maybe a memento for whoever was at the gig, and it was pay what you want for it. You know, it wasn't, we weren't saying give us £20 for this. It was like we understood how everybody was really struggling financially, and especially we don't want to rip off any fans or anything, but we wanted to. I don't know, like the old days, you know, people would put out live recordings and things like that, just quite, they would sell them on the merch desk and things like that. So, you know, it was a fan thing, and it was for if you were at that gig and you wanted a memory of, or to relive the memory possibly of that set, it's there for you, you know, it's like an archive, I suppose you could say, instead of like full releases going, hey guys, check out this piece of shit, you know, it was like, it's for true fans. And for to I don't know, part of the journey, you know. So yeah, I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, we love Bandcamp as well, and I feel that they really support artists. So we wanted to really be part of that as well, you know. So yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot of work, to be honest. But it kept us going, and it kept people that were interested in us to see where we were. You know,
you've mentioned it before, you've toured with The Cure. I guess a dream came true sharing the stage with them.
Yeah, I mean, it would never be, it was beyond my wildest dreams to even let myself think about that, you know, to even think that that is a possibility. Yeah, 18-year-old James, 21-year-old James would have just went, would have told myself to fuck off, you know. So I felt like I was living a dream. I felt like I was living a lot of people's dreams, to be honest. So I wanted to make sure that I took full advantage of being present, and not just being there for a good time to learn. I think Robert brought us and continues to bring us for us to learn, because he believes in us and he wants us to grow. And I think within the music that we've now created and who we are as people and how we approach this now, the lessons that we learned on those tours were, yeah, priceless, you know, like, and to have someone like Robert, one of the best songwriters of all time, at the end of an email or a phone call to talk about just being in a band or the songs or anything, he's a friend now and he cares. And that's just, it's hard to find that even in just what, like anywhere. So to find it in such a amazing person and that really wants us to succeed, that just, it just made everything special, you know. I've been on a lot of tours where you're the support band, you're the afterthought, you know, like, and that's totally fine, you know, I understand that. But we felt part of the family as soon as we were brought in, and I've got friendships and connections with not just the band, their crew, and just memories to last a lifetime. And when I was in the pits of my illness, sometimes being able to reach out to that and think of that, knowing that it happened, was a guiding light to try and get back to some sort of something, you know? So it wasn't, yeah, it was everything I hoped it could be and more, but I really wanted to make sure that I didn't waste the opportunity either. Mm-hmm.
I can imagine that the Cure fans were a grateful audience for you, was it?
Oh yeah, we were embraced massively by them. I think Even by the fans that probably they might not even like the liked what they heard, but they appreciated that Robert was a fan, and he said that having us play before The Cure really got him up for the gigs, and what a privilege and honor that was. So I think they, even if they didn't like it, they understood why we were there, if that makes sense. But we've been so lucky. They're a big part of our fan base now, you know. And I love hearing. When I go to a concert and somebody comes up to me saying, I discovered you at a Cure concert and now I'm here, and I'm like, job done. Well, we did okay that night then. You know, so that's just reassuring that you're not terrible.
How long are the Cure sets? 3 hours or so?
Yeah. And I
Can you
watched
imagine doing a 3 hour set?
as I'm getting older, I don't know if I'm going to be throwing my limbs around as much as I used to. My old back isn't what it used to be. But to do that for an hour and a half was enough. So yeah, I don't know if I could do it for 3 hours, but I've never had the opportunity, to be honest. But it's amazing to do what they're doing. And Robert's voice still sounds like he's a young boy, which is so inspiring to me to look after this, you know? So yeah, it's I watched every night because it was an education as well as a dream.
Putting the friendship with Robert Smith aside, how did you react when you got the chance to remix the Fragile Thing, a song of their last album, Songs of a Last World?
Well, it was Andy who did that, but just even knowing that, like, Robert trusted us with some of the most important music in his life ever, you know, like that record is so special. I think Andy really enjoyed it. You know, he was I think you could go into it two ways, being scared and stressed about making it perfect. But I think he knew Robert believed in him. He wouldn't have given it to him if he didn't think he could do it, you know. And I think he just reveled in the fact that he was getting to hear these sounds and things like that. I think Andy did I don't know if it's released, I don't know if I should say it, but stuff it. He did a remix of Just Like Honey as well by Jesus and Mary Chain. And he was just like, just having those recordings in my ears and things like that. And it was just the same for this, you know, like to have those raw recordings to have fun with. I know, you know, and I think he did a great job, and Robert was very, very complimentary. So again, I just an another amazing thing that it shows a great belief in us as artists. I feel he's given us a great confidence where I don't have a lot. I've never had a lot of self-belief. I'm not a musician. I write music. I write my lyrics. I write my melodies. I write the songs with Andy, but I can't play an instrument. I have no rhythm. So yeah, to know that the one small part that I do that, he likes that as well. It gives me confidence to know to not be down on myself about not being able to do that, but focus on the things that I am good at, if that makes sense.
It's not such a small part you bring into the Twilight set. Come on. Do you have a personal all-time favorite song of The Cure? Which one and why?
There's so many different genre kind of things over the three.
Depends on the mood.
Yeah. Plain song, just plain song, or yeah, plain song, or yeah, anything off Disintegration, to be honest. It's just absolutely, but I just think when I every night that they played, they played Plain Song, it just sets a tone and a feeling in the room. And I think there's a really special video of Robert singing it to his wife at the side of the stage one day at the Hollywood Bowl. And just things like that, just seeing how meaningful that was to him and knowing how much that affected me. But I think Pictures of You as well, because when I listen to Pictures of You, I think of home when I'm away. And look at pictures of the people I love and probably cry on the tour bus about missing them. But it brings out the emotion, you know. Anything that brings out an emotion in me is, I mean, it's quite easy to bring an emotion out of me, to be honest. But like, yeah, those songs. But I love the big pop songs as well. I love Friday I'm in Love. I love all that. It's just a spectrum. I've been able to write heartbreaking songs to classic pop songs. It's just such a gift that to have those running around your head for months on end on tour is just that it subconsciously sinks into your to you, you know.
Officially, the Twilight Set is a duo nowadays. Some longtime members, for example, Johnny Doherty, left. How come and who will join you on stage this year when you play live again?
Well, I think that the big thing is it's like it has taken 7 years to make this record, and we aren't a band that are I don't know how do you say it, like playing stadiums and making lots of money to be able to just live off this, you know. Johnny, for example, is a father now as well. He's got two very young kids, the same as me, and this
And
is
he
a.
lives in the States, doesn't he?
No, Johnny lives Glasgow. Johnny lives in
Okay.
Glasgow. There's the Johnny Scott that was playing on drums. He
The
play, he
former
lives
drummer,
at
okay.
yeah. He just played on that record. He was kind of session, kind of came in and helped us. But yeah, Johnny had as a new band. Johnny's really passionate about metal music and heavy music. So he's got a new
Yes,
band
this
with
Doom band, isn't it?
with Dominic from Mogwai. And Johnny had been in the band for a long time, and I still got on great with him. He was a fantastic person to be in the band with. So for it, life just happened, you know. Like, and I mean, I wouldn't have put all my money on me being able to do this again, if I'm being honest. If I had a young family and I was relying on this person to make me a, to, you know, it's not an easy decision. And I think, yeah. There's life outside of this, and I really respect. And Grant, who was playing drum with us, he was in Frightened Rabbit. He also had two young children as well, and a business and things like that. This has always been Andy and my thing. We write the songs since we were at school together. So, yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I was gutted and sad that I wasn't being able to share the stage with people that I felt were my brothers, you know. But completely understand that. It's not my life, you know. This is other people's lives, and as I know, it looks great on the surface, but behind the scenes, it's hard to make a living out of this, and for five people to do that as well, it's just like it's a lot to ask of people, and I was really proud of him for being able to make that decision as well. And Grant has a cider business and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we're still in touch and all that, but at the moment. Playing with us, we're going to have Kat Myers on drums.
Played with Texas and Mogwai,
And Benefits, I think a band called Benefits, and
and
Honeyblood. Yeah,
Honeyblood,
that's how we originally met Kat. And I saw Kat play with Mogwai because I was supporting on that tour with another band, and it was just like wow, she's just like so energetic and just hits them pretty hard, which it's kind of we need a I'm again I'm not a musician, but we need a rock drummer, you know, like, and she is like powerful. And then Simone Butler, who used to play in Primal Scream, she will be playing bass with us. We start rehearsing in next week, I think. So yeah, that's the core band now. And but as far as the Twilight Sad goes, making records and things like that, it's me and Andy now. And we've Every other record Andy's produced, and it's the same way we've written every record, me and Andy doing it. And then Andy basically is the you would hate me saying this, the creative director. Do you know what I mean? Like, so he oversees everything. So yeah, it feels like a new start, if I'm being honest. It does feel like I'm getting a lot of feelings that I felt 20 years ago, if I'm being honest. Like, I feel like I'm a different person coming into this now. So I'm apprehensive and nervous about jumping back in, but and those were feelings that I had when I was younger. Like, what is this? What is this going to be? Like, do people still care? Do people even want a Twilight Sad record? Do you know? Like, I don't know these things because I haven't been. I've been just trying to get to this point, if I'm being honest. And then it's really up to the universe how everything goes, but. It's a pretty exciting time in the band, and it's a new, fresh thing. But the music is still on the same trajectory as it always has been. I see a real through line and within all our records now. If you look at even the artwork, you can see there's a journey there, and it's not just, oh, we need to make a record, let's put some songs together and fling it out. There's a lot of thought went into it, and a lot of tears and a lot of all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm excited about the live stuff now. Very excited about singing my songs.
Can you describe the personal and professional bond you have with Andy? Is there a blind understanding between you?
Yeah, we're very different, to be honest. Like, very different. We have a lot of the same passions and likes, and we love film, we love music. He's so much more educated in music than I am. He has really gone back and studied music, you know, like he has a degree in music and all that, but I mean, like, went back and studied old records and really, really loves music in a technical sense and a creative sense. Whereas I'm just pure, hey, here it is. I'm crying. Let me sing, you know, kind of thing. But he's my friend. We grew up together. Like, he was my first friend at high school. Like I say, I was the only boy in my class at school and in primary school. When I went to high school, there was just a big school, didn't know anybody. And luckily, Andy knew that I liked the Manic Street Preachers, and that was my first gig that I went to because he met my sister at a football game or something like that. So there was a connection there, and he liked the Manic Street Preachers, and it was just like we bonded over that. And then he made me sing in front of the music class because the music teacher said, "Can anybody sing a song?" And Andy went, "That guy." And I had never sang really in front of anybody. So I sang, I think it was Australia by the Manic Street Preachers. And that kind of seems like the moment that Andy went, "Oh, I could use that. I could use that guy." So it's like he then delivered me all my favorite records. He would go buy records and say, "Listen to this, listen to this, listen to this." So my musical education is because of him, you know. So I wouldn't be here doing this talking to you if it wasn't for Andy McFarlane, you know. I had a job, a job that I didn't like, but I had a job, I had all that kind of stuff. I love music, never thought it would be as big a part of my life, but he brought it out in me. But even beyond that, when I was in a bad place, when my mother died, he's friends with my family too. He was there for me, you know, like he was there for me in the way that he knew that he needed to be. And so it's a really close connection we've got, both musically, and we've lived most of our lives together now. So it's to have done this 20 years with him is quite amazing. And I'm starting to look back on it and be just, I can't believe that our songs have taken us to the places that they have, and I'm really grateful. Yeah, love my bits.
Let's talk about the new album finally. I think it's brilliant.
Thank you.
I like the stylistic variety. I like the more rock-oriented sound in certain songs, like "Get Away From It All." I thought you might get more electronic in the last couple of years, but then you proved me wrong with this album, which is damn catchy and beautiful. See "The Ceiling Underground," for example. Again, you've made an album that is 100% the Twilight set. What do you like most about
Everything you just said.
Okay, next question.
I love that it exists, I'll be honest, because there was a lot of time where I didn't think that it was going to. It's taken 7 years, you know, like anything that takes that amount of time, there has to be a love and a passion and a reason to do it. I just love that it exists, if I'll be honest. Like, and everything that you've said, I really. There was a lot of times when I was writing this record where I like to call it, I've heard the term flow state, where you're just letting things happen naturally. Like the song comes naturally instead of really going, oh, I need to do this. Things just work. You know, I've heard people say that if sometimes it feels like a song has been a gift given to them. It just, and there's so many instances on this record when I was writing that it wasn't about writing a song, it was about getting a feeling out and expressing it, just finding some catharsis and needing to scream about how unhappy and unwell I was and sad that I was, and just all the other things wrestling in my head. Like Waiting for the Phone Call was a song that Andy sent me, four pieces of music, pretty stripped down chords, guitar, and maybe some just some other like a fan organ or something in it, nothing big and produced or anything. And the music for Waiting for the Phone Call, it stuck out to me right away, and I went on a walk for about 2 hours. And by the end, I came home with pretty much how the song is. It all just came flowed out of me. I came home, I recorded it, and gave it to Andy. And of course, there's some bits of changes here and there, but as far as the bones of the song was, it was there, and it was just in me, like, and these were words that needed to come out. And a lot of the time, that's what's happened. But I also wanted to grow as a singer. I'm like, I have just, like I was saying, I can't play anything, I can't do anything. This is what my instrument, I suppose. And it's like, I want to be good at it, I don't want to just be a guy that gets up and mumbles or drunkenly falls about the stage like I used to. I want to show that I can do this, and that I'm actually think I might be okay at it, So melody, I love melody. I love pop songs. I love metal songs. I love all kinds of expression and songwriting through vocals. So I tried to just do what came naturally and just think about melody and all that. And I'm so happy you said like the melodies, like they're hooky and things like that, So yeah. Yeah, I've kind of went, I've lost track of what I was saying.
Oh, no, it's fine, it's fine.
But I'm very proud of the record. If this was the last record we ever put out, I think it would be a nice footnote in the band's career, but I'm not going to say that. I don't, I we'll see how this goes.
I hope there are coming many more.
Me too.
On Waiting for the Phone Call, again, you've worked with Robert Smith. How was that to have this legend featuring in one of your songs?
Yeah, like, so me and Andy spoke about it quite a lot. Now, Robert's featured on a lot of artists' records and things like that, and obviously his vocals are so iconic and things like that. I think we all felt that if we asked Robert to sing on the record, it would be detrimental to the record because the record's about my loss, and things like that. But Robert has been there through the whole process of all of this, and we gave him the demos from an early stage. He's commented and suggested and things. He was part of the process, like it wasn't just like, oh, there's a really famous guy in a band, let's get him on to guest so we can. It was like, no, he has been part of this. He is passionate about it. We went down to London to rehearse one day for acoustic gigs, me and Andy, and he came along to the studio and brought Mike Hedges, who produced a lot of the early Cure things, and we listened to the demos of the record when he had a big notepad as well with all like notes and things, which was terrifying. But
Like a school teacher.
but like the best thing about when Robert does that, because he helped on their last record as well, was is that he never says, don't do that, that's rubbish, do this. He's like, try this, try that, this could work here. He makes us do the work, like
The
he'll
positive
suggest,
encouragement.
yeah, because and it worked. Of course everything that he told us to do worked. Of course it
Of course.
did. So it genuinely felt like he needed to be part of it somehow, and we were so grateful that he wanted to be any part of it, but to he picked the three songs that he felt that he could add to, not just jump onto. He like he and the things that he did on, say, even like my favorite thing that he did was on Back to 14. There's a melody as comes in as the instrumental goes on, and I loved that song already. I thought it was fine, perfect the way it was. And then he did that, and I was like, wow, that's the icing on the cake. He's just brought up a level again, you know? And it's so to have him part of this record, I think you said it earlier, he does feel part of this. And it's not just because of who he is, it's because of who he is as a person and a friend as well, you know. He's helped me through some of the shit, the worst time of my life.
From a far distance, and over the last couple of years, following you on Instagram, and listening to this one podcast from a Glaswegian guy, which was at the beginning of COVID. Can't remember.
John Paul,
Yeah, I guess it was.
he's my friend.
Okay.
We just were looking for something to do. So
Yeah.
I have no idea what I said on
So
that.
I see you as a very passionate, sensitive, and empathic person. And on the new album, the song Attempt a Crash Landing theme closes with the line, "Those angels, they come in the morning, they come at night," which is dedicated to all the NHS workers who cared for your late mother. That is very touching and personal. Is it always easy to sing that line?
I haven't done it yet. I've done it
Okay.
once. I've done
You're
it on
scared
record.
to?
I'm scared to do a lot of them, if I'm being honest. Yeah. And I should be, you know. I should be scared. That's fuel, you know, to I want to fight my fears. That's the big thing about all of this now. I've been so scared for so long. I'm just like so fed up of it. And I want to push through that now, you know. I want to show all the faith that has been put in me and all the people that have helped my family over the past 7 to 8 years. I'm doing it for them as much as I'm doing it for myself. So that has to give me the energy and just has to give that gives me the reason to be here doing this, you know. And that line was always going to be in there. I'm so appreciative to my mother had nurses come in the morning, the afternoon when it got really bad, and the night. And then there was a constant nurse at one point. And just seeing the selflessness for rubbish pay, no appreciation. They deserve more than even a few lines at the end of a song. So that small bit was something that I needed to say thank you in some way to them, even if it was shrouded in mystery. You know.
Does in general bring singing a song back the memories of the time when you created the song and the
Yeah.
feelings, not the memories, the feelings I meant, sorry.
Yeah, I haven't. See, we're rehearsing next week, and that's going to be like first time being in a room since being in a room with the Alex and David, who played bass and drums on the record. We were in a room like bashing out things for a couple of weeks before we went into the studio. So that was the first time I'd pretty much sang the songs live, and I seemed to get through that okay. I think I was just focused on not coming across as an absolute chancer, like how do you say, an imposter syndrome kind of type thing, because these musicians are I'm fans of, you know. So it's like it was more of don't embarrass yourself, don't embarrass yourself, instead of really. And I think that was good to have that block to just go sing the fucking songs, James. You know, just
Like
don't
tunnel
crack.
vision, yeah.
You'll probably find on stage I'll be wearing sunglasses a lot just to hide the tears more than I'm only joking. I won't do that. I'm not an arsehole. But yeah, I'm in the past with songs that have been very personal. There's so many things whilst you're singing it. There's like eureka moments of, oh, that's what it's about. Because like sometimes I say like the song just comes and I'll record it and it makes sense at that point. You're like, yeah, I know what it's about. I know what that's about. I know that. I know that. Years down the line, you'll find yourself in the middle of nowhere singing this song, and then a realization happens. You're like, Oh, it wasn't just about that. It was about this, and this, and that can boom hit you, and you're like, shit, get yourself together, you know? So it's a constant battle in my head to try and even get through an hour and a half of to stay in tune and to not cry and all that. So our concerts are emotional things, and I don't want to take that away from it. I want to feel things with other people in a room again, and I think that's a big part of our concerts, that why people come.
This is an emotional, personal question as well. Did your mom like your music and your lyrics, if I may ask?
Yeah, she did. My mum was. I only found out that she was the kind of musical person in the band when I started in the family. Sorry, my mum was in a band when she was younger, I think, just a vocal group, I think. But she was really into the Rolling Stones. I went to see Elton John with my mum numerous times. She was such a big Elton John fan, and I loved going with her. Like she discovered bands throughout my career that she loved. She loved things like Future Islands, War on Drugs, that she saw when we were at festivals. So they embraced the weirdness in me pretty early on, you know, like they might not have understood it to begin with, to be honest. I think it, if you listen to that debut album, you probably think, what the fuck's wrong with my son? But she loved it, yeah. And she was She actually did the merchandise for the band for a long time, and I only found out after she stopped doing it, that she sent personal notes to people as well and stuff like that. But the reason she had to stop it, because I was so confused when she stopped it. It was the dementia that, like, at that point we hadn't even she hadn't even been diagnosed, and it was like, yeah, things sentences weren't making sense when she was writing them and things, and she obviously recognized for herself and just without telling us said, oh, I can't really do this anymore. So that realization was pretty gut-wrenching, to be honest. But yeah, I think a lot of people when they heard that first record would have liked to have thought I came from a torn family and all that kind of stuff. It's not the case. It was pretty tight-knit group. Us against the world, kind of thing.
You said before, actually, I read it in the info mail from your record label, that in the past you've used a lot of metaphors in your lyrics, and on this album, you don't. What made you opening up, and does it bear a risk to open up? I mean, you're very open to me now. It's a very emotional and deep and wonderful interview so far. But it's not always easy to speak the truth.
At the time, it's not, but after it feels like a weight has lifted. I one of the problems with me when I got ill was that I went against everything that I preached about, as in speak about things, talk about it, don't keep things to yourself. And I did all that, you know, and I got really ill, and that was from pushing things down and not facing it, you know. And I think as men in Scotland, anyway, I can only talk about that's a very common thing, and it's a stigma that I think we should try and break. But it's not easy, but it shouldn't be easy either, you know, like nothing that's worth doing is should be easy. So talking about this and these things have they've already helped me massively. You know, I say that every interview is like a therapy session for me now. But I am terrified about doing it this time, especially because it is pretty raw and people can go, I'm putting myself out for judgment again. But this time it's like 100 million times more vulnerable, I'd say. And I felt to do justice to myself, to my mother, to the people that are going through the same thing as me, because this is a very human story. People have little differences, obvious differences, and how they lose people, and terminal illness and mental health and things like that. But these are all things that somebody will go through in their life at some point, I think. Well, definitely death. Everybody has to deal with death of their friends, and we're all going to have to come to that conclusion at one point. So I've really kind of discovered that it's best to talk about how we're feeling, and making sure that we get the stuff out there so it might help other people. And also just I want to show people that you can get through it. And if it means putting myself in awkward positions or hard positions, then it's the one thing that I can do to show that no matter how tough it gets, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And just I'm now here to live the fullest life for my mother. That makes sense.
I can assure you that the majority of people will appreciate you opening up and don't hide, but in a negative way, behind metaphors. So
If it helps
no
one
worries,
person,
no worries.
if it helps one person other than me, job done, you know?
How often do fans tell you that your music helped them through tough times?
A lot. I used to do all the band's social media, like all of
Okay.
it. I was very passionate
Connect.
about talking, the connecting. Yeah, exactly, connecting. But it got too much when everything got too much. So, yeah, the internet's a scary place. But I will say that we have been extremely lucky with the people and the things that are written to us and the honesty that people have given to us over the years. Within messages and things, I really prided myself in getting back to everybody, which is it was a lot to take on, I'll be honest. But like, I always thought if somebody had taken the effort and the time to write these feelings down to tell me they deserved nothing, like they deserved a reply, you know, like, and I loved that. That was the reason to be in a band, you know, not to be on the big stages, not to things like that. It was connection, to find out that you're not alone, you know. And there's I over COVID, I did a lot of lyrics for people that would say they were going through a tough time, and I says they would message and I'll say, "What's your favorite song? Write it out, send it to them," because everybody needed something to look forward to, and if that was what somebody wanted, I'd be more than happy to do that. Yeah, I feel we built a real great community. But again, 7 years since the last record, and life moves on. So I don't I'm scared that everybody's maybe found another moany Scottish guy or something to listen
No, there's none.
to. But oh, there's loads. Honestly, you've just not met them yet.
I
Oh yeah, you have. You have met a lot of them. But yeah, I hope that makes sense.
know. So music is therapy for the listeners as well as for the creators. What is music you listen to like your feel good music to make you to put you in a better mood?
See, I haven't had a lot of control over the music that's been in my house a lot recently because
Apart from
of
children music,
so any
Bob the
estate
Builder.
that, oh God, honestly, that I'd take Bob the Builder over some of the stuff you've got now, I'm telling you. But I've really became quite nostalgic and trying to like finding music that I loved when there was nothing else happening in my life apart from music. And it's just the same things, to be honest. Mogwai, Cure, Nine Inch Nails, all those things, the miserable, epic things they make me not feel alone, you know. But I do love pop music. ABBA, I actually love ABBA. ABBA are one of my favorite bands because the melodies are just fantastic, you know. And I think that's a good thing that Andy doesn't listen to as much pop music or anything like that. And I think the contrast between that is good because I think in this record especially, you could tell that maybe I was listening to a little bit more melodic music, you know. at the time, nursery rhymes. And to be honest, nursery rhymes has always been a thing in my head that I've enjoyed putting into songs. If you listen back to maybe a lot of the other albums, you'll find things that kind of are quite similar to the hypnotic, repeated lyrics kind of nursery rhymes, you know. I find that really interesting, you know. But yeah, I've been yesterday. I went for a big walk on Aberdeen Promenade. I've been going out walking every day, like I was saying, for just to feel better. And I was listening to the Deftones, so I was just absolutely walking with a stride, and like kind of I love heavy, powerful music as well, you know. So I really enjoyed the Deftones' new record, and all the kind of things that people would expect. To be honest, I would love to say I love modern jazz, but I don't.
You should try the new Turnstile record. It brings
I love it
in a really good mood.
Love it so much. Yeah. I went to see them. I haven't seen a lot of gigs, but I went to Glasgow with my brother-in-law just to go there, and it was unbelievable. And I love their cover of the Stone Roses they did the other day. It was awesome.
I've seen them live. It was the best show I've seen last year, so it was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, thank you for reminding me. I actually listened to that 2 days ago in my walk in Montrose, but I'd kind of burned the I'd over listened to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it was nice. I took a wee break and then I came back to it. I think because that cover became, I saw the cover on the internet, and I was like, I'm going to go back and listen to that. And it's such a great record. It's such a great record.
Can you imagine writing a Twilight sad song or lyric being in a really happy state of mind?
I'd like to try.
Not saying that you're always in a bad mood, but
no. But this is it's the darkness is the side that I want to get out myself within the music. If I'm being honest, that's the getting that out of me is great. You know, I don't want that festering inside of me. I'd love to write a happy song. I want to be happy. I'll be honest. Like, I've been so sad for so long. I've got so many great things in my life. I've got two fantastic boys, a fantastic wife. I love where I live. The music industry is not the healthiest one to be in, I'll be honest. It's not. It doesn't make me happy, the music industry. So I'm trying to forge a way through it myself to find contentment and to be able to do my job without all the outside noise. Because there's a lot of wolves in sheep's clothing, I think, within the music industry. And I want to be happy, and I'm doing my best to do that. And if in 2 years' time, once this album's, or 2 years or a year when this album cycle is finished, yeah, I'd love to write a happy song. I know that maybe disappoints some people, but I have to exercise every element of myself to see if I can do it. You know, I want to that's a challenge, you know. I want to challenge myself. But we have probably about 10 other songs from the writing sessions that are probably they're up there with the songs on this record, that we need to kind of start working through. I don't think it'll maybe like if these are all ifs and buts, but like kind of sister record, if that makes sense, like linked. There was so much coming out of me at one point that, yeah, it was hard to keep a lid on. So we do have more music to work on, which is exciting.
I mean, you can call yourself lucky because you have Andy and you have the guys from Mokwai who also run your record label. And as far as I can see, it's also a very friendly coexistence. And I mean, they're pals of yours.
Yeah, I wouldn't be in a band without Mogwai either. I actually read a lot of the early lyrics came to me whilst listening to Mogwai, because the instrumental music, there was space for me to be able to put my own words into those songs and then take them and use them for my own. So Mogwai are, with in so many ways, so important to me as friends, as a label, as inspiration. Yeah, there was a point where this record was it was in a tough place as far as just getting it made, to be honest. Like, they stepped up, gave us just the confidence, everything like that again to go, no, you need to do this, you can do this. And as soon as the record was finished, Stuart and Martin, the messages they sent me will stay with me forever, because I think they were just so relieved that it happened, and that it happened, not just that it happened, that it is what it is, you know, like they're proud of it too. So again, like, they're all pinch yourself moments. I think about this band. You've got Robert Smith, you've got the Mogwai, you've got so many of the my heroes that are telling me, you're all right, you're quite good at this. So maybe I should start listening
Yeah,
to
you should.
them.
If not the Cure, who would you like to support in the next couple of years?
Depeche Mode would be good. I like
Okay.
Depeche Mode a
Oh,
lot, yeah.
makes sense. Nine Inch
Yeah.
Nails.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Without a doubt. Deftones would be cool. But the Cure were the pinnacle. You know, see when we were younger and you write the lists of, oh, who could we play with? Cure were at the top. Always. Especially Andy was always Cure the top. So don't know if you can get much better than you can. For us, you can. But yeah, all those. I'd like to go and support the bands that we've spoke about there as well. Like, even like I love Interpol's debut album. It's just such an important record for me as well. Bands like that,
Which
just
one
being
was
able
that?
to Interpol's debut
Okay, yeah,
record,
well,
yeah.
yeah, for sure.
And there's other, I don't know, there's a record that I feel influenced me a lot. I don't know if we could support them, but it's maybe we could do it like acoustically or something. But Sufjan Stevens, Carrie and Lowell, I think he kind of denounced that record recently. He said that he wasn't too proud of it, but it was that had such a big impact on me, that record, because there's a lot of similar kind of themes, I suppose, about parents and things like that in it. But I'd love to, yeah, to see what he does up close, you know. And from the what I was saying earlier, like doing the Cure tours and using it as an education, I'd like to do that with other bands as well, and just really see how they function, how they write songs, take inspiration from that. This is a work in progress for me still, you know. I don't want this, like I was saying, I don't know how many records we'll make or if this will be the last or whatever, but inside me right now, I want to write music and I want to write different music and I want to see how far I can push this if the universe allows me to. So within supporting bands like that, you pick up, you're like, you become a sponge, you know.
Is there any new artist or band that blew your mind recently?
Turnstile, they're not a new band, but that they're new to me, you know. That gig was such a community experience, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the
It was
whole
like,
crowd is one person, so to
yeah.
speak, somehow.
Yeah, I and to be able to do that is a
Did you
real
jump around
power.
as well? Or standing in the
I
last lane?
was like,
Okay,
oh,
my back hurts.
no, I was just a spectator. It was a spectator sport
Okay.
that night. But I felt part of the crowd, though. You know, you felt part of it. There was just no way of not feeling part of it, and I loved that. New artist Michael Timmins is a friend of us who has supported us a few times, and Andy is producing his new record. And I was down in the studio, having signing some records for record stores, and they were working on the record in the other room. And what I was hearing from that other room was pretty special. I think that will be out this year at some time. So, and it was different from what he'd done before. He worked, he only kind of worked on records himself before. This felt like, don't want to, I don't know if it's my place to say, but it's just, it was a sound that I was like, whoa, this, you know, you hear something, you're like, okay, I feel that, you know. So Michael Timmins is a fantastic artist. Dire are supporting us on our European tour. I'm hearing a lot of kind of Cocteau Twins things and what they do, and I really enjoyed their past two singles they've put out. They have an album out in April, I think. So yeah, but to be honest, yeah, I don't have a lot of time for new music. I'm kind of just going back the way now to just to feel the feelings that I felt
Yeah.
when I discovered the things I loved before.
I know the feeling, yeah.
I can tell with all the CDs if you have.
Yes. Yeah, all the vinyls are over there.
Nice. CDs are making a big comeback, apparently. Like younger generation
Yeah.
are loving them. So cool. It's good with
Yeah.
me.
James, I thank you a lot for this very emotional interview. I hope it was not too much,
No,
but
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed
I enjoyed it really, really a lot. I hope to see you soon live. Maybe I ask the German promoter for coming to Berlin Wuhlheide for the third show of The Cure.
Yeah,
Let's see.
definitely. And if you're there, come and say hello to me. If you,
Yeah,
yeah, because
I try.
although I might just be hiding in the shadows.
James, I thank you a lot. I wish you all the best personally, mentally, and musically. It's a brilliant record. Don't be afraid. You're gonna make it.
That means a lot. Thank you so much.
I
And
thank you a
yeah,
lot.
I've really enjoyed this conversation. And yeah, all the things that you said to me, right back at you. Wish you
Thank
all the
you.
best.
Very kind.
Thank you.
I wish you all the best. Say hi to Andy.
I will do. Have a nice day.
Okay, you too. Bye bye.
See you later.
Das war Bio Records, der Talk mit James Graham, dem Sänger der schottischen Postpunker The Twilight Set. Den Link zur Band und den zu meinem Label Bio Records findet ihr in den Shownotes. Das war's für heute. Abonniert den Talk, folgt dem Talk und empfiehlt ihn gerne weiter. Danke und bis bald.
Bahill Records. Der Talk.